Okay, we'd like to call the meeting to order, and we'll come around the room and introduce everybody, introduce yourself. And so, Ben, would you start in that corner, and we'll just work our way around and then all the way back to this corner here.
Thank you.
Ben, this is the West Head Town Regional Council.
Yes, WFRC staff.
Jory Johnner, WFRC staff.
Dylan Cullimore, Mayor of Cotton Heights.
Dirk Timothy, Bluffdale City.
Andrea Pearson, WFRC staff.
Joanne Segane, Riverdale City.
Norm Searle, Riverdale City.
Matt Sybil, Utah Transit Authority.
Andrew River with WFRC.
Bill Applegarth, Riverton City.
Wayne Bennion, Council staff.
Karen Cronin, Riverton, Bluffdale County.
Gary Deeney, Cedar Hill City, and Matt is Chair of Regional Transportation Committee.
Bob McKinley, UTA.
Fred Marshall, Grantsville City.
Dan McConkey, UDOT Commissioner.
Shane Marshall, UDOT.
Carmen Freeman, Herman City.
Heather McLaughlin, Holt, WFRC staff.
Rex Harris, Region 1, UDOT.
Debbie Sigmund, UDOT.
Troy Peterson, UDOT.
Lisa Wilson, UDOT Region 2. Muriel Sarsfield, WFRC staff.
Matt Hacker with WFRC staff.
Steve Call, Federal Highway Administration.
Thank you. Come up, please. Well, let's see. We went down the side. I'm sorry. We got everybody. I would just share with you one thing before we start the meeting. We, the Salt Lake COG, had the opportunity today to meet with our legislators for lunch, and the speaker was there, and the Senate President, President Niedermeyer, was there as well. I would just say this. There was a very good working feeling from the speaker and the president and the other legislators there. They emphasize, as we all know, every budget's tight, but they really do have as a priority what we need in transportation, and as we need water, we need schools, we need a lot of other things. I just felt extremely comfortable with their balance as they look at that in that regard. And so I just want you to know that. There will be a lot of projects that will be funded this year through the legislature, UDOT projects and others. I don't think we're going to see any great big tax increase as far as we've had the past couple years. Those of us that live and reside in Salt Lake County need to work to get Prop 1 back on the ballot and take it over the goal line. You know, we lost by 2 or 3%, and we just need to work to get it done. I look with great appreciation with those of you in other counties that worked with you people and worked with the electorate and got the Prop 1s passed in your areas and see great things that you're doing with that money. And so,
and we're all jealous. We're all jealous of what
we are. Yeah, you're right, Mayor. We are jealous, but we just need to work harder, you know, in that regard. And if any athletic team, the good thing is when you lose, you just pick it up and suck it up and practice harder for the next game. And that's what we're doing in Salt Lake. And so, again, I just wanted to let you know of the support of the legislature for transportation. We call the meeting to order. We're looking for a motion on the minutes of the August 18th meeting.
Mr. Chair, I'll make motion.
Second over there from Carmen Freeman. Any discussion to the motion? Seeing none, all in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you. The ayes carry it. We will now go to anyone who would like to address the Transcom today can come up to the podium and give us your name and address the group here in any way you might want to do from the public. Okay, seeing none, we're going to close.
I was waiting for somebody to jump up, and I don't want to go to the podium. But, Rod, how many of you have problems with panhandlers on freeway entrance exits?
We have that problem in St. George.
any place in the state.
Yeah. Down by every road.
I've brought you a copy of my city's ordinance that makes it illegal for distracted drivers or for pedestrians to step in the roadway. And we have cleaned out all of our panhandlers. So if you'd like a copy of that, come and get one from me.
Okay, thank you very much for bringing that up there.
Mayor?
Uh-huh.
I don't want to go up there either, but I want to mention this to you. Prop 1. Prop 1 was put on the ballot in Washington County. It's nip and tuck until the 16th, and they do the final count. We won't know, but it's pretty close. But the city of St. George put it on, and I don't think they did a very good job educating the voting public about it, but it's right in there where it could pass by the 16th with the provisionals and the mailing ballots.
Are we still limited to what we can say as elected officials if we put it back on the ballot?
I believe the law was, and I'm no attorney, but I believe the law was, is we can educate in any way we want before it is actually put on the ballot. And then on the ballot, we have to allow, if we use our resources for pro, there has to be resources provided for con. Is that not right?
That's right. You can always provide educational information. Mm-hmm. You can also always share your own personal opinion. If you're going to use public resources to advocate, you also have to allow opponents to an opportunity to share their view as well.
There, one thing that I'm going to do is I give, as a lot of cities do, I give a state of the city report to our city council the first meeting in January, and I'm including a component of that to go over educational ordinance. And because our budgets have been cut, and so what happens if you don't keep up with them? Well, we know all those things.
Yeah.
And then that somehow we need to generate more income. And then to show during the year what some of the money has been used in Davis County and Weaver County and so forth for this great project. And I think I'm just totally okay with that legally. You know, as we do it, I don't know when the county will put it on the ballot, whether they'll do it in 2017 or 2018. I would hope it's for me personally, and others might disagree. For me personally, I hope Salt Lake County puts it on no later than 2018, because we need to keep that momentum going and move it ahead. Yeah. Yeah. Any other comments on the issues? Okay, so we will turn our actions now to item number 3. And this is a transportation improvement program, a TIP program. And so we will turn that time to Ben. Is that not correct? To Ben. Okay. So Ben, you'll take it away.
Did we get car chairs?
No, not today.
Oh,
by all minor cartoons, maybe that was. Since our last meeting, well, since the last time that the regional council met, as far as the month of August when Transcom met, the regional council received a board mod request during the month of September and October, and those were taken care of in October, and we'll talk about them in just a minute. And we've received additional requests to modify the transportation improvement program since that time for Transcom to take action. As you're aware, Transcom will take action on board mods during the months when the regional council doesn't meet. They've been delegated that responsibility. The Transportation Improvement Program is a 6-year list of projects that are actually funded, that are moving forward, and so it's quite a dynamic program. There's always changes to the project funding, the changes to the scope, changes to the timing of the projects, and so about every time we have the opportunity to meet, we have a board modification.
In this particular board modification, too, you need to be aware that there's things that enable us to take action here that do not require a 30-day public comment period, which would be a full amendment. Those things would be that the project's either already on regional or the regional transportation plan on the first phase, or they're not a regionally significant project, or they're an exempt project as identified by federal highways. So today, the board modification we have is identified on tables that are attached to the resolution that's in the packet. There's actually two tables. There's six projects in all. And so we'll run through those six projects, and if there's any questions, please feel free to ask. This is what the table will look like. I've got them in as bookmarkers in this so you know when to turn the page. Instead of growing up, remember the little records when Tinkerbell rings her little bell like this? Well, I could have wore a tutu, but this is probably more effective.
All in favor?
So
that would be worth seeing.
So to illustrate here, kind of to remind you or to bring geographically how large our area is. So we look down here on the southern end. This is down Utah County. And then we're all the way up here into Brigham City, up in the Boggs Elder County. And so we've got a fairly large geographical area, including Morgan and the Tooele, that the regional council has a responsibility over and delegated down through Transcom and the Regional Growth Committee. This first project that we're going to talk about is right here in the heart, about Kaysville area. This is an intersection in Kaysville. It's on 200 North. And Angel Street, 200 North, is the interchange here in Kaysville. The intersection's down here. Due to some off the screen here with a new elementary school and a lot of growth, this intersection, there's been some significant concerns identified. This project was originally programmed. Hit the wrong button. Here's a zoom in on this. This project was originally programmed in 2014. With the funds existing in 2018 and 19. The improvements to that intersection would prepare for future development as identified in the long-range plan to have 200 North as a five-lane facility. But it also aligns the crosswalk, prepares, or does the needed improvements that are necessary to address both alternative transportation modes as well as the vehicle traffic through the intersection. The request for this project is to actually exchange the funds, taking them out of the federal program, and using those federal funds, we'll exchange those with some state funds. What that'll enable us to do is reduce the potential of some pitfalls, as well as be able to increase the construction time of this intersection. So rather than waiting out to late 18, more than likely into 19, this project would actually be able to go into construction next year and address the needed concerns. So the request is actually, why we're bringing this to this body is because we're exchanging the funds. This is on 85 cents to the dollar, so we have a little more than $3 million in federal funds programmed. At that exchange rate, we'll have 2.5 plus million in state funds. They can move this project in a little quicker, do it a little cheaper, and accomplish the project in a fairly quick manner. The next project that we have is actually located here in the Salt Lake Valley area. This is over in the Sandy, up on 9400 South between 2200 East and Little Cottonwood Road. This particular project was originally a pavement rehab project, but it needs to come before this body or be modified because they want to include some barrier improvements, actually replacements and repairs. So looking along SR 209, all sorts of traffic along this, but along this in a couple of locations, the barriers as well as some of the shoulder improvements. So rather than just doing a pavement rehab, there's barrier and shoulder improvements. This project is not changing cost. This request is simply a change in scope. The next project was a little, we had to zoom out too far. This is out on the west side. This is in the Tooele area. This is on the Mormon Trail. Currently, this project is the milepost 11, well, you can see on the milepost, and when we zoom out here just a little, you can, wow, here, I didn't mean to go that fast. Initially, this project was a pavement rehab or reconstruction project. Initially, this portion right here was already, it was reconstructed. It was a little less than a mile. Phase one then had for the next mile to be reconstructed. This board modification actually will do a full depth reclamation for 7 miles on this particular project. Now, a full depth reclamation, so here it is on the rate of the project. Here's the existing facility here.
That's a pretty good piece.
It is.
Yeah, that's one of the better pieces of our own.
So, what it'll do, the full depth of reclamation, what it does is it comes in and it grinds up the asphalt and then into the base and subbase. That amount is determined. And then what they do is they'll, if you follow this little chart right here, sometimes if necessary, they'll remove some of the excess material. But then they'll come in and they'll prepare it, and then they'll lay a new surface over the top. And so rather than just reconstructing 1 mile of facility, they'll do this treatment or rehabilitation treatment for 7 miles along this facility. So it's a change of scope. The project lengths get quite a bit longer. Funding amount remains the same. The next project, so this brings us into change, or page number two. First project here is in the Salt Lake Valley. This is on Redwood Road between 47th South and 31st South. This initially was also a pavement rehabilitation project. However, in preparation and the concept development for this project, it was determined that there was some needs for drainage improvements or improvements to the drainage facilities. That's outside of the boundaries or the guidelines for just a pavement rehab, so it needs to come before the body for modification. Funding amount remains the same, but rather than just a pavement rehab, they'll also address the drainage issues in this particular section. The next project has the same request. This is out on SR 201, and this particular project goes from I-80 up to 9200 West. Again, this was also a project that was going to address just the pavement, but as they got in and refined that concept on the project, it was identified also that this had some drainage concerns, and so this project will also include that same amount of money, but just a change in the scope.
Okay.
Yes.
So when you say drainage concerns, are they actually installing storm drains, or is it just different kinds of drainage issues?
Some of me, well, we've got region 2 that can
replace the storm drain.
Okay.
So that depending on the source of the funds, are there limitations on being able to use it for actual infrastructure like that as opposed to the road itself?
Yes, actually, well, so the pavement rehab has remember, they used to be called Purple Book Program, and so they have some strict guidelines of what's able to happen in that, how much can be removed and replaced, and what can be done. And anything beyond that goes beyond the commission, and it's actually taken out of the Purple Book Program and put into an asset management program. And so they'll do the pavement rehab, but then they do all the extra improvements that need to happen there using the funds from the pavement program. Is that?
That's close. That's it. Yes, a lot close. That's it.
That's right, Ben. That's close enough, Ben.
The funds set up to do pavement only. When we want to do something outside of pavement only, we need the commission in this body to add that scope. So it's the same amount of money, but you just have to use it a little bit differently.
Okay, it was just something in the back of my mind that said, depending on the source of the funds,
infrastructure for storm sewer was limited. SDP funds or CMAP funds or whatever it is.
There are, yes, you're correct, Mayor. There are some funds that come with some strict directions that we can't touch things. CMAP funds would be one that really puts some constraint.
But not SDP.
No.
SDP is very fun.
Then the very last project, this one here, and here's a larger view. We probably should have had this one when we were looking at the Mormon Trail. The Mormon Trail project is up here. You can see where we are. This one here is west and south of us. It's actually out here on SR 36, but is still in Tooele County. This particular project is a low-volume rehab. In the past, the department had the projects in level one and level two roads. But now they're able to tweak that and utilize projects on high volume and low volume. And this particular facility is here on SR 36, and it's located in this particular position or location. And what it is it's a pavement rehab, but there's two projects that were out here, and what they want to do is bring both projects and combine them together, but the type of pavement treatment and the need of some of the pavement treatment is going to require some additional funding. So this project not only has a change in scope, bringing two projects and making them one, but they're increasing the project total cost by $1.6 million. And these funds come from unprogrammed Purple Book funds. And that would include all of the projects in this board modification.
Are there any questions for Ben? Seeing none, we're looking for a motion.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion to the motion? Seeing none, all in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, so that is unanimous. Ben, we would have you go on then to item 3.2, the report on the board modification.
Again, as mentioned earlier, when the regional council met back in October, they approved a board modification, and it had quite a list of projects, as you can see in your packet. There's a signed resolution in your packet. They had an opportunity to review each one of these projects, as we did on this earlier board mod. And unless there's questions, we can walk through any one of the projects if you have any questions.
Okay, so are there any questions from the board here? To give you a moment to look through it. Okay, seeing none. This is not an action item, but just an information item. Is that correct?
It is.
Okay, so we'll now move to 3.2, letter of intent.
Wonderful, thank you.
Did I say 3.2 or 3C?
The letters of intent kind of initiates the process all over again. This past September, we sent out a request to all of the local governments, as well as Utah Transit Authority and the Department of Transportation, to identify potential projects to be considered to receive federal funds. Wasatch Front watches or manages and helps coordinate and program six funds. Four of those funds have been identified in letters of intent. That list of letters of intent has been included in the packet. The purpose of bringing this list before you, as well as it will or has been brought before the COGS, is to enable the elected officials to review the list to make sure we have not missed something that you anticipated being evaluated or considered for funding. So if you were to look at the list, they're initially started, or the page, the first five sheets or five pages identifies those projects that are identified in the Ogden Lake and Urban Area, which goes from North Salt Lake all the way up through Brigham City. The next six pages go through the Salt Lake West Valley area, and then the last two and a half pages identify the projects in the Transportation and Land Use Connections Program. Now, in the first 11 pages that we walked through real quick, those have the STP programs, which is the Surface Transportation Programs. That's the most flexible of all the funds. There's also the CMAQ, the Congestion Mitigation Air Quality Program. Those projects need to demonstrate an air quality benefit. And then there's the Transportation Alternative Program, or the TAP funds. And so I would ask if you could review those lists. If we're missing something, if you could let us know as a staff so we can follow up with your cities. Maybe for your information, in the STP program, there is projected amounts, and these numbers are all real estimates. We may have between 25 and 27 million a program between the two urban areas. We currently have a request in the letters of intent of about 182 million. In the CMAQ program, there'll be between 7 and 8 million to program. We currently have about 35 million in request or identified in letters of intent. The TAP program, which will have just a little more than the 1.4 million to program, in the letters of intent, there's more than 11 million that have been identified as potential needs. And in the Transportation Land Use and Connection program, where there's about $1 million, there'll be about $1.5 million worth of projects requesting or letters of intent that have been submitted to this point. Any questions on letters of intent? TLC's right around $1 million.
Okay, if there's no other questions on that issue, we will now move to item...
Sure. Ben, would you just explain a little bit more about the process going forward?
Oh, thank you, Andrew. Yes. So, we'll make sure we have all the letters of intent, and the staff will review those lists for eligibility and the types of funds that may best suit that project. And we'll make recommendations back to the project sponsors to prepare a project evaluation concept report or an application. Those applications then will be due the middle part of January, the 14th of January, and that deadline is going to be a hard deadline. Letters of intent has been a soft deadline, so we don't miss anything. But that concept report deadline or application deadline is a hard deadline, because then we dig right in and begin our evaluation process, which will take us through the end of March, where the technical advisory committees will then make recommendations, and we'll bring that information back to this body in April for your review and recommendation to the regional council as to what projects enter the draft programs of both the STP, CMAQ, the TAP, and the TLC funds.
Okay, any other comments or questions?
Mayor, I just had a question. On the federal funding that we're getting, we've got a change of administration now. And is there something we can do to advocate for that in terms of more federal funding to a state level? Because it would be interesting to see what approach they're going to take to transportation. But the previous one has really tightened screws down in terms of what we get, my understanding. And so I didn't know if that would be a discussion item.
Yeah. Sorry.
You said it will...
Sure, absolutely.
You said it'll be interesting to see what the next administration is going to do. I agree with that. There's a lot of uncertainty, of course. I will say that President-elect Trump has said that he wants to increase funding for infrastructure, transportation, and otherwise. The administration has to go through their transition and establish their priorities, and I think it behooves us, Utah and the country as a whole, to be clear about our needs and the value of investing in infrastructure, and as well as the value of supporting local governments. So we should look for opportunities to do that. Beyond that,
Anyway, I just think it's something, I'm just wondering if there's something we can do maybe from the UDOT perspective to say, you know, let's be proactive, because I agree, he's already mentioned he's going to be more proactive in terms of infrastructure and road work that needs to be done that has been lacking.
I think Tuesday night we hit a real good proactive when it went up on the screen that we were a red state in the election. If we had been one throwing it into the House, we would have lessened our chances, I would think. So that's a good one.
The only other quick point. So I'm sure that other associations are chiming in on this, but for instance, the American Public Transportation Association, APTA, of which UTA is a member, is developing comments to the incoming administration. I'm sure AMPO and NARC and others are too, so that's a great point about how do you influence that and make your points be heard.
Yeah. I don't think you can start too early. They passed a five-year bill last year. That's going to extend through the bulk of the administration. I can't imagine they change anything anytime soon, but that bill hasn't been fully funded this fiscal year, so hopefully at least they can fully fund that bill to the level that it was passed at. That would be something I think that could be discussed with this current administration right now.
And Mayor, as you know, in the last meeting we were in, Speaker Hughes seems to have a good relationship with President-elect Trump, and he's speaking at this next conference, is he not? The one in Sacramento?
Transportation Speaker. Yeah, Sacramento.
So he's speaking there, and he's looked at in a national way as well, concerning the Prop 1 bill and other things that the legislature has done. So, you know, if the Commissioner Dan, the Transportation Commission wants us to help in any way, or UDOT, otherwise I think we'll just leave it with your two organizations, and if you need us in any way, we're always here to help. But it looks like what we're seeing is it's moving along the track in a pretty positive way now.
The first 100 days of Trump's administration, will find out if there's any hope. Other than that, I'm pretty sure that, me personally, I'm going to contact our congressional delegation people.
It's a good idea.
Hey, boys and girls, your head man said such and such. What are you going to do for Utah? And just put them on notice. We're watching them.
Mayor, that could also go into transit. Another.
Yeah, absolutely.
Without question.
We ought to be pounding the door a little bit, because this may be an opportunity for Utah.
Yeah, do you have any counsel or advice on that? You know, some of us have lobbyists back in Washington. We can contact those as well. And certainly as mayors, we can contact our representatives as well as we look at this.
Great talk. Thanks, Mayor.
I think most mayors have recommended one of the congressional leaders during the election, and if you were recommending an incumbent, it looks like all of them won, and so that helps us as well. We saw this big vote count in Salt Lake County that we're not sure if we did, but I think the trend's going to hold us there. Okay, anything else on that issue? All right, thank you very much, Ben. We're going to go to item four. We're going to turn the time to Matt Sybil to deal with the draft goals and budget for 2017 for UTA.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Before I start, I wanted to actually say, so I was at the Salt Lake COG meeting. I thought Mayor Albrecht did a great job in representing the local transportation need.
There was they had to go to the C team, and we did the best we could. They brought me off the bench. I was on the second bench, so I wasn't on the first bench. I was on the second bench.
Your football analogy, in the red zone and the goal line, it's a good audience. Nicely played. So I'm going to briefly go over our 2017 goals and budget with you. All of you at the municipal level should have received a very large packet from us that has all of the details of the budget and the goals. And so I'm just going to cover this off at a very high level and would love to get some feedback on it. We are required via policy within UTA to do this every year, to reach out to our local elected officials, as well as lots of other stakeholders. And so thanks to Wasatch Front for allowing us to give a summary of what you all have on your desks here today. So, and I invite our board chair, and actually I realize that there are three board members here today, so I'll allow them to chime in anytime they want to about the UTA budget.
So, chime in as long as I have questions.
I'll cover off these basic steps about, okay, how much money are we talking about? How have we strategically set ourselves up to spend the money, and then our proposals for operating capital expenses for next year? If you like bar charts, you'll like this graph. If you like pie charts, you'll like the next graph. They show the same thing about where all of our money comes from. And I tend to like pie charts, so I'll use this one. And about two-thirds of our revenue, as it has for a long time, has come from sales tax. The other thing you'll start to see here, and this is not put in here to rub in anyone's nose here, but you'll see Prop 1 start to pop up. What we've done from a budget perspective is, for at least a few years, kind of firewall off our revenues from Prop 1. And then eventually we'll go into our general budget, and then we allocate that and show via our equity analysis how those monies are being spent equity. But for now, it is separate, so you'll see this on the revenue side and then on the expenditure side as well.
Matt, what's the other consist of?
So sales tax, passenger revenue.
The 4.4.
The other. So things like we receive about $1.5 million a year on advertising revenues. And so there's a bunch of little things that go in there. Interest, revenue, those kinds of things, just like collectively add up to that. Capital, the same thing. I have bar charts, and I personally like pie charts. So this is how our money that comes in that is to be spent on capital and state of good repair expenses. These are the monies that come into our agency. So most of that is, as you can see, half for our BRT project down in Utah County. These are monies that are federal grants and are also coming from Utah County, from the Utah County third quarter. The capital revenue from leasing actually shows up on the operating side as well as on the capital side. It's a little strange. But then the rest of our grants, we're getting a small set of bonds next year. And then you can see in Prop 1 on the capital side as well.
Matt?
Yes.
Maybe everybody else knows the answer to this, but what was the lawsuit of the BRT in Provo, Utah County?
Yeah, Mayor, that has to do with we entered into an agreement with Orem and Provo about the use of the public right-of-way, and the opponents basically were trying to take that action that the cities did administratively and said, no, that needs to go to a referendum. And that went to the Supreme Court rather quickly, and then the Supreme Court said, no, that's not an issue for us to decide. And so we've agreed to move forward with the project with all the partners. Even if worst case scenario, that ended up where we couldn't operate exclusively in the right of a small section of the street where we'd actually just be in mixed traffic. So Federal Transit Administration said, you know, that makes sense to us, go forward. And next month, we anticipate getting the federal grant for this, with the big publisher's clearinghouse check that they'll be willing to do. So thank you for that question. Okay. Goal setting process, I don't talk about this. This is sort of how things cascade down. You'll hear more about this. We've been at an executive level and then working with our board, trying to mesh goals and then also what we call True North. So we'll talk about service people, environment, community, and stewardship. These are kind of topics you'll see over and over again. We tried to couple our budgets and our expenditure side with these kind of top-level true norths, if you will. And the work that we did have done with our board or areas that they want to see implemented on the bottom, and then those other five areas on the top mesh really nicely. So let me cover a few areas where we're proposing to spend money, and if you have any thoughts on this, again, they're all the detailed budget actual proposed expenditures are in lots of spreadsheets, and you all have that with you. But just in a nutshell, these are how we're proposing to spend monies in each of these kind of pinwheel areas. So in terms of the service side, probably no great surprise there. We've got significant service increases in Davis and Beaver counties, also in Tooele County as well, working with the locals to add new service there and reducing dial-a-ride service and some bicycle connections to the system. And so that's been a good process. We have new ski service going in. We've overhauled our ski service in Salt Lake County, and I think we're in a good place, Mayor Cullimore. We had some revisions to how that worked in Cottonwood Heights. We modified a couple of things, and I think we're in a good place. It's new ski service in Davis County as well, up to Snow Basin. So this is actually across our whole service district. We've got ski service. And then what we're calling service standards, we'll talk more about that in a later meeting, hopefully. On the people side, things that you would expect us to do to keep our employees happy, with merit pay, health insurance increases, and continue to fund our pension, as you would hope we would do as a major city. Stop me if you see anything you want to talk more about. We have this topic that's environment, health, and sustainability of the system. We are trying to get rid of the oldest buses we have. We have 59 buses that are of the vintage of 1999 to 2001. And actually, those at Wasatch Front who do this for a living here, look at air quality, know that just like with your car, and Kip's not here, but others could jump in. I think it's the year 2003. If you have a 2003 or older car, that's when there are a lot more air pollution, a lot more pollution that comes out of an 03 or older car compared to 04.
Yeah, and 96 was another breaking one as well.
On the bus side, it's 06. If you see, well, not that you know an older bus from a newer bus, but if you see an 05 bus in our fleet, it pollutes way about 85% more than a bus that's manufactured after 2006. So these will all be gone. And Debbie, I think you're good at this. We're also getting into the electric bus realm. We've got 6 new electric buses coming at the end of next year. 2 of them will be at the University of Utah. The other 4 we're going to put probably in downtown Salt Lake City and run between Central Station and the University of Utah.
Matt, are those the ones that charge from the infrastructure in the road, or do they plug in at night, or how do those buses work to where they can run all day?
We haven't totally figured out the recharging type yet with the manufacturer. Ideally, we'd like to utilize what's already been done at the university with the WAVE system, the wireless charging. That system works, doesn't provide a ton of power, so the buses have to kind of sit over that pad. The concern is for too long, and plus there's only one pad out. So we may end up doing, they'll charge overnight, and then we also may charge in the middle of the route with a different system, but we haven't quite worked through that yet.
Matt, what about the natural gas? I know you've got some out on the fleet. Are they more expensive than the electric, or how does that?
No, so the natural gas bus is about $50,000 more than a diesel bus. The electric bus is another $200,000 more than that. So if you start looking, the life cycle cost of the electric bus is much, much less than either of the other two, because the fuel is about a third or a quarter of the cost.
So are they looking at natural gas buses more? Because I think they would contribute to the clean air.
Yeah. So you're allowing me to talk about one of our other needs in the world. Thank you, Mayor. We can't actually buy any more CNG buses until we can rebuild our downtown bus garage, because right now the buses are located about almost a mile away from where the fueling station is. So we have to run our buses back and forth across the railroad tracks. There's physically not enough infrastructure there to do that effectively. So we're trying to rebuild that depot district bus garage, and then we can actually buy more CNG buses. So that's one of our big issues this year. We're trying to get some legislative help with. So thank you for bringing that up and helping us.
I also asked about the maintenance of electric buses over
Yeah. I mean, the life cycle cost of electric buses, it's a no-brainer. There's no oil. There are no fluids. Electric motors have been around for 120 years, and they're very simple. Our main issue is we're trying to do this very thoughtfully. We have, and Shane can tell you this, the environment we have in Utah is the extreme on both ends. We get the coldest of the cold and the freezing and the ice, and then it gets hotter than Hades. And the bus manufacturers, the electric bus manufacturers, are having a little bit of a hard time trying to develop a bus that will work for us. So once we get a bus here, it'll work anywhere in the country.
Matt, the 59 that you're replacing, is that a large, is that a big chunk of your capital outlay for next year?
It is. Yeah. So you see,
BRT is huge, but from there, it's this is the purchase.
The only, so you'll, let me go back to that actually for a second, because the money that we're spending on capital, capital revenue, actually, I've got the expense side of it. I'll come back to that, but generally, it's all for standing good repair or for buses that we're on. There are no other projects aside from the Provo one.
Investment in the environment. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's under the environment. So you're right. That's right. Community, there are tons here. I won't go through all of these. We're using a different term, and thanks to Wasatch Front, we don't really even use transit-oriented development anymore. It's more transit-oriented community. So we really tried to realign our TOD program to a community-based program and make that work with what the communities want to see. So the TLC program, which you're all familiar with, is really integrated into our world with transit-oriented communities. And so we have lots of things here. Prop 1, our Tiger Grant projects, which you all know about, and we're excited because it ties with all six counties we serve. That's going to start happening next year, and UDOT's a big partner with us on that.
Matt, may I just elaborate a little bit on your reference to transit-oriented communities and the distinction of transit-oriented development? UTA has property that it owns, but I think in a very healthy way, they've been looking more broadly at the relationship between their transit system and what's happening in our communities, and recognizing that they want to work with you in your communities to take the best advantage of that transit system in a way that allows for you to achieve your development goals, also your community goals. Sometimes that's going to involve property that UTA owns, but actually most of the time it doesn't. But so UTA is a partner with the community and with WFRC in working on making the best coordination between transportation and land use and housing and economic development.
Thank you for clarifying. That's good. And on the trust and accountability, some things that we hear loud and clear about access to board meetings. Hopefully, they're not with video streaming. Fundamentally, all of our committee meetings will be open to the public. And our board, I think, is doing a very thoughtful process now. How many committees do they want to have? What types of committees? What they want to do with that? That'll all be open and streamed live for us. We have perhaps we can all gripe a little bit about unfunded federal mandates. Our federal government's a great partner, but this positive train control is one that we are making some investments in out of requirements with our front runner system. We were about, I would say, 80% done or meeting the federal threshold of what's called positive train control. Basically, if an operator becomes incapacitated or falls asleep or does whatever, the train and doesn't respond to cap signals, the train will shut down. We were about 80% there already, so we have to get to the other 20%, which is all the basics we have in our system. This requires us to do some more. So we have to spend some of our own money to make that happen, and that's what positive train control is. And then, you know, many of you were around when we cut the ribbon on the original track system in 1999. Those vehicles are 17 years old and need to be overhauled. So they need new electrical systems, and a lot of the components in those vehicles needs to be replaced. So we're systematically working through that over a period of 3 years. And then our grade crossing program, which we've done a lot of these over the past couple of years. We have another series of them kind of working north to south on tracks, and it wouldn't be possible without you. It's amazing. If you haven't seen, so our folks will do a time-lapse video on this, and then if you fast forward, it's over the course of 2 days, they'll actually close down 33rd South, for instance, overnight, and tear out all the pavement and rip out the track, half the track at a time, and then rebuild that, and then the next morning, trains will be going on one side, do the same thing the next night. In the course of a weekend, it's absolutely incredible. It blows my mind watching these guys go to work on a major arterial, shutting it down carefully over a weekend, and being done by Monday morning. It's open to the public.
It's very cool to watch if you have a chance.
Yeah. It's an interview. It's really fun. Okay, and then some quick bar charts on, let me just go to my more favorite pie chart. So, operationally, this is how we're proposing to spend our resources. As you would imagine, most of it is in the bus, light rail, commuter rail, and just putting the service out on the street. You can see Prop 1, again, has a small component of that. I'll remind people, this was intentional back in 2006. So $1 out of every $4 we spend goes towards debt service to pay off the bonds on all the rail that we built over the past 10 years. That's what that debt service and early debt retirement is about. But you get asked the question, can UTA build this or run that or operate that? I'd like to show this graph that we're still paying off the intentional investments that we all made back with the referendum previous to Prop 1. And then on the capital side, this kind of gets to Shane's question about where we're going to be spending money. Most of it goes towards the BRT project in Utah County. And then most of the rest, about more than a quarter, is for keeping our assets, all those different components from IT to the vehicles to everything between, in a state of good repair. And then other capital projects, such as the positive train control I talked about. And then Prop 1, you can see these are shelters and amenities, bike lanes, these types of things. I think the Tiger expenditures are also rolled into other capital. So that is about it. I just quickly, next up, this is out for public comment right now. Our board's holding a public hearing on this next week, and we'll take comments through the end of November, and then our board, we're a calendar year operation, so the board will consider and hopefully finalize and adopt the budget at the December 21st meeting.
Okay, any questions for Matt? Okay, Matt, can I just keep you there a minute? And would any other of the UTA board members here like to clarify or comment or make any statement here?
The only statement I'd like to make is if anybody has any comments or questions about anything, get those in so we can deal with them. We need to massage them. We'll do it.
Any other comments? Please.
There's never been a better time than now to lie can be associated with UTA. It has its past, and that is literally past and behind us. And now we've got a vision in the future that we think is bright, and the board is dedicated to doing all the things that we promised we'd do when we got that audit 2 years ago from the legislative intern. we've accomplished all that. Under the direction of this new guy right here, he's our new chairman. He's a good man. We brought him in from out of town. He didn't bring any baggage, and he's a smart guy. We like Robert a lot.
Any other comments? I have a comment kind of with a question. And I'm very sensitive to your budget and not adding something that's going to really impact your budget heavily. As a mayor, I feel that I get a lot of information from UTA. There's a lot of meetings I'm in and so forth that has been very helpful to keep me in tune with what UTA is doing. The real power in any city is three votes on a city. If you have a five-city council like we do, it's three votes on the city council. I always say the mayor really has no power. The mayor has influence, but the power is in those three votes that are there. Many organizations, but they can. They're smaller, they're more regional, and so forth. But if there's a way, in some way, and it may not be able to be done in person or whatever, to educate our councils more on what you're doing and let them feel a part of it. Let them be able to ask you questions. Let them be able to see things that are happening. And just a thought. Again, I don't even know how many cities you would have in the Wasatch Front, but you have a lot. It may be totally impossible 54. To do that. But maybe it's a chance to, and I don't want to take away from the other county, maybe it's a chance over the next year or year and a half or whatever we're looking at time-wise before Prop 1 comes back on to the Salt Lake County ballot. Maybe there's a chance to come out and meet at that time with them in that regard. I think it can pay great dividends, but sometimes I have these wild ideas where I say to one of our staff members, can you work on this and get this out? And I always have to watch myself because sometimes it takes them 37 days and it's just not even worth the 37 days. So I'm not trying to overload you, but just a thought to think about and see what you can do.
Yeah, if I could maybe comment on that. Actually, Mayor, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think that's a great comment, Mayor. And I think every city has unique situations that can impact UTA. You know, for you and I, transit's a big, big deal for us. Other areas, maybe Bluffdale. Maybe busing, I don't know. But I'm just saying each area is unique, and I think that personalization on a community level, I think, will give you a scope of, hey, this is where we need to focus. I think it's a good thought.
One potential way to think about it, and there's no substitute for us coming out to your communities to do this. We, a few years ago, started doing what's called Transit Academy.
Right.
And that's at UTA's tracks maintenance facility, and it was first initially thought of for new legislators to learn about UTA and command, and then ask questions, and then they get to drive a train, and it's neat and everything. And then we kind of morphed it to all elected officials, but that didn't quite work because there's just a lot of elected officials. So we've been trying to think about maybe ways to tailor an approach with, maybe by county or by sort of region within the county. We have cities, elected officials, also legislators from those areas who want to come in, and maybe they can sort of, at the same time, come to UTA. So that's maybe one idea that I'll let me think through that.
Think through one of the problems with that with our council, and it'd be different with different councils. Right now, on our council, we have a teacher who would be very difficult to come during the day to things, and we have some other hourly employees who would be very difficult to. And so, you know, those are kind of difficult things. It's difficult to have things at night from the UTA staff point of view, and I understand that. But anyway, just a thought as you think about it, and I think, you know, if you can come up with something, I know you will, but I just wanted to throw that out there. Okay, anything, any other items of discussion on this UTA? Okay, if not, we are going to move to item number 4, and we will involve Rex Harris, Region 1 Program Manager, and Chip Mason Hill, Region 2 Pre-Construction Engineer, to help us understand where UDOT's going and any way we can help in that regard. Thank you for being here.
I'll reintroduce myself, Rex Harris. I'm the program manager of the Region 1. So mainly what I'm going to talk about very briefly is Davis County North. And I'll probably mess Chip all up because he hadn't seen what I was going to present, and I don't know what he's going to present, so we'll probably cross a little bit. The next slide I'm going to show you here in a second, we're talking about the Transportation Improvement Program, or TIP program, and when we're talking about that, we're talking about capacity. And so mainly those projects are the projects that you're going to be finding in the larger urban areas where we have a lot of traffic and our capacity needs. I'm going to show you this document. It's a living, breathing document. I wanted to keep it simple so you can see what we work off of. So it's going to show the statewide priorities on it and how we actually work with that and how that actually is influenced. When we talk about the 2018 to 2023 program and when we talk about priority, we're really talking about the tail end, 2023. We're looking at funding. And the funding will come in that out year. And so when we're talking about priorities, we're talking about what we're looking at and trying to add to the program. The other projects are already programmed, pending some action by the legislature for bonding or anything else like that. Their priorities are set because their funding is set. You're not going to be able to read this. It's too small to read, but I just wanted to show you that this is what I live. I live off of. You'll notice that there's some places where there's X'd out in process. As projects get funded, things come off the list, things get added to the list. And I'm going to go down and break down and talk a little bit about this. But generally, it's broken into these areas. Widening existing facilities, new facilities, upgrade existing at-grade intersections, new interchanges on existing freeways, upgrade existing interchanges, passing lanes and streets. So briefly, just to break this down and to show you how this works, this is the list for widening existing facilities, and this is the statewide priority. Of course, there's more needs than what shows up on these lists, but these are what rise to the top, and this is where our priorities come from. And if I'm sure there's a later pointer here. How does that work?
There's one underneath here. Or underneath the top of the podium.
You'll notice, sometimes we talk about, projects come about created within a black box. We won't have the time to talk totally about how the scoring is done. But generally, each project is given a score here, and they give them a range. And the reason why they create it with a range, it's really hard to say that if you got a project that scores a 70.1 and one that scores a 70.2, that one's more important than the other. There's other factors that go about how timing, how they fit in with other projects, discussions go on. So they put them in a range. And if you look here, widen existing facilities, over here on the region, most of these projects, you'll find that a large number of these projects end up in Region 2 because that's where a lot of our capacity needs are. But for Region 1, we have this project on here, 1800 North. This is in Clinton that will be tied with another project we're going to see with an interchange. It's the widening of a five-lane facility, basically from Main Street out to SR 108. They have an environmental document. It's ready to go. It scores fairly high. You'll notice that it's one of the top in the state in terms of scoring. Our other project that we have on here is SR 108. We've been widening 108, which is 3500 west in one county and 2000 west in another county. It borders between Weber and Davis County. One of the middle sections that we haven't done yet scores a little bit lower, but it's one of our priorities. We've been working on the north end and the south end, and that's actually gets us into the middle. Moving on, new facilities. our highest priority and comes right after, you know, a priority with Mountain West, or the Mountain View Corridor, which obviously scored very high, is West Davis Corridor. Very high priority for us. Scores very high. Hopefully when we get a rod on that document, funding will come shortly thereafter so that we can move ahead with the project. Moving on, upgrading existing at grade. You'll notice that we don't have any in our region, but the majority of that is Angular Highway. Very, very important need. They score very high. New interchanges on existing freeways. Here you'll find that the 1800 North here, that's the one that tied with that earlier project. That's the interchange portion of it. Here again, it scores up to the top, top priority statewide. Upgrade existing interchanges. You'll notice that we have 24th Street in Ogden. It scores a little bit lower than some of these others in the Salt Lake area, Region 2. There's also one in Region 4. Also with that, we have these interchanges, three interchanges right here that are in the Layton area in between Layton and I-84, 193, 103, and 97, the 650 North, 5600 South, and 700 South. We do have a project already programmed in the TIP to add the HOT lane through this area on the interstate, similar to what we did in Southern Davis County. And we realized that there's interchange needs as well. And so they're on the list. As you see, some of them score very highly. This one at 650 North scores very high because we know that we can build that without doing a lot of extra environmental work. Some of these other 700 South, 5600 South, are corridor issues and are going to require EISs to help accomplish those. Passing lanes, we don't have any passing lanes. You'll find most of that's down south, region 4. And here's where you get to studies, environmental studies. We have the Shepherd Lane interchange. We know that there's a need there, and what comes out of West Davis corridor will still leave a need for a Shepherd interchange. We are sure of, and so we'd like to make sure that we can address that. And down here at the bottom, these are those two interchanges we talked about on either side of the 650 North one that we know that will require EISs to do those. But that's just in a nutshell where our priorities lie. Of course, as I said, there's other projects that have needs out there, but when you rank them statewide, these are the ones that rise to the surface. And of course, we have, in our region, we have some that are competing very highly in terms of their score and their needs. I'll turn the time over to Chip. I'm sure Chip, he has a lot of great projects he probably wants to talk about. But if there's any questions for me in regards to Region 1, if not, I'll let Chip answer all the important questions in Region 2.
Thank you very much.
Well, Rex may live off this stuff. I prefer to live off cheeseburgers. So, try to go through it. First of all, I want to thank you for letting me present this today. It's our draft information, so it's going to follow the same format as Rex's. I'm going to try to jump into some of our bigger projects, give you a little information on that. So the first one we talked about was widening existing facilities. The one that's shown up here on the screen is the I-15 northbound braided ramp from 90 south to I-215. It's about $120 million project, and what it's supposed to do is reduce some of the weaving issues we have there between 90 south and the 215 interchange. If you ever driven that in the afternoon or even in the morning, coming on at 90 south and trying to get over to the through lanes, you fight that weave, people trying to get off at 215. So this project's move that weave point back to before 90th South, so when you're getting off at 90th South, you're making a decision at the same time to take 215 and 72nd at that point. Other projects we have on there, the I-15 managed lanes, it's an ongoing deal, 172-5600 West, from 201 to I-80, $45 million project, and 248 up east in Park City. New facilities we're looking at, one of them is the 201 extension to SR-36. That project is about $110 million, and it's to provide an alternate route from the Salt Lake Valley to the Tooele Valley, back and forth. The concept we're looking at is a three-lane reversible system down right just south of the I-80 interstate, so it's on that same team, north of the railroad tracks there, right along the edge there. It provides basically reversible lanes into the valley in the morning and out of Salt Lake Valley in the afternoon. Another one on there is the Porter Rockwell Bridge. You could connect that route.
No sharing.
I'm just wondering why it's not on top.
That's what it's about.
And then the last one in this area for us is the Mid-Valley Highway connection. Like Rex mentioned, a lot of the upgrade existing A-grade interchanges are all on Bangor Highway. They're basically the next phase of Bangor. Right now, you know, we've got the four that are going currently. These are the next ones we've prioritized to add onto those, starting with 6200 South, 104 South, 126th, 98, 47, 134.
So those are your priorities?
Correct.
They're listed in priority?
Yes, sir. The one shown here is actually 6200 South. It's the conceptual drawings we've gotten from the study on that one. So.
But this is just a single project now, right? All of these are a single project?
The current Bangor 4s we have lumped together.
We have four that will be under construction next spring this year. Not these four. These right now would be individual projects.
They are individual. Okay.
They could be lumped together into another large project if you want. That's cool. But
if this isn't the biggest anyone, then we can skip it. I would mind being walked through the designations. There's a lot for them.
As far as on the drawing itself?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Is that okay?
Let's see if I can use the pointer. So this is mainline Bangor, straight ahead. This is 6200 South here. So we're basically turning in, this concept puts it as a SPUI, or a single point urban interchange. So we come off Bangor, instead of having the signal there, we need the signal underneath, so mainline Bangor will continue flowing. We provide access on and off of Bangor at that point. So think of like 90th South with I-15 or any of the existing SPUIs we have, we'd be turning that into that configuration. Any more questions on that? The next one, I'm sure everyone's heard a little bit about this, it's out in Tooele County. The Mid-Valley Highway Interchange is the only one we had for adding a new interchange on an existing freeway facility.
Let's talk about it for a minute.
Keep on moving.
The only person here that really cares.
We care. We don't care. I care.
Are we in Florida?
It's as bad as if we were.
So I believe the cost estimate for this new interchange is around $40 million. And the intent is to relieve or help. It helps with congestion at the existing Lake Point interchange. Helps with safety issues as you've got a lot of traffic trying to get on and off of I-80 at the Lake Point interchange. And it also helps with economic development. It provides a shorter access down to the Utah Industrial Depot, which is as well as the Walmart distribution center over west of Grantsville.
It will affect Walmart. They don't use that. They use XV for it.
Okay. So it will affect the Utah Industrial Depot and provide a more direct access to the freeway. than currently exists with Lake One.
That's about as much as I know of it as well.
Okay, I just thought maybe you had some new information.
Unfortunately, no, sir.
It's needed, it needs funding, and it's a priority for their revenue.
Andrew knows that it needs to get done. He got caught in one of them roadblocks out there.
The mayor made sure of that.
It was set up.
The next one I'm looking at is the upgrade of existing interchanges. We've got three along I-80, Kimball Junction up in Park City, I-80 and State Street, and I-80 and SR-36. The image shown here is the I-215 SR-201 interchange. We've got some conceptual drawings that modify this interchange to provide a little better flow there. So you've got 215 southbound to 201 westbound ramp, and about 30 million, 201 westbound to southbound, about 35 million. 215 northbound to eastbound, 45 million, and 201 eastbound to northbound is 41 million. The reason for the variations in the cost, a lot of this area, the majority of that cost, we think it'd be structures, but a lot of it's actually fill material to fill in some of those areas to get the ramps to work properly. So if you can follow that graphic, it took me about a half hour to figure it out.
Does that affect any existing structures that are next to that area?
With the new ones that are going in with the 201, the 215 project, no, this one either flies over them or incorporates them. So the new structures for 215 are right here. This ramp would actually go over the hook ramp, so we still have the hook ramp from northbound 215 to westbound 201. But this one brings it over top of that ramp and ties back in for southbound. So it does get some elevation out there. One thing it does that's a little different is you see two ramps coming off here, both of these for southbound to westbound and northbound to eastbound. What it'll do is it'll provide, at those locations, as soon as you get off those ramps, you've got Redwood directly east and you've got 32nd directly west, which creates a pretty good weaving issue. So you've got some people that are trying to get all the way over to continue on to either Bangor or I-15. So that's what the secondary ramp is. It actually drops them into the median, brings them down to the middle of the roadway so they can bypass having to weave across there. So studies we're looking at, like Greg said, we don't have any passing lanes either in Region 2, they're all down south. So the studies we're looking at, I-82-15 Foothill Interchange, we're looking for an environmental study for about $5 million there. The next one would be 600 West, 146 South to Bangor, down through the old prison property. So that was for about $300K. We're looking at that. The graphic here is the conceptual drawings we have for the mouth of Parley's Canyon, 215, I-15 Foothill Interchange. With that, if there's any questions.
Any questions?
So it's kind of interesting. So the loop ramp there is existing currently. You come from Foothill to go on the 215 or to go back on the eastbound I-80. Be there and be expanded a little bit more. It's more a rounder configuration, so it's a little better speed. One of the bigger, weird changes is this ramp here. It is actually for 215 to go to Foothill eastbound. So instead of coming up here and taking that really nice umbrella handle, it dumps you right in on 215 Foothill. This one would provide you much better access to get up on that.
Any other questions?
First slide, please.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
This one?
5600 West. I've been out of it for a while. You remind me about the bus rapid transit. Is it supposed to be aligned with this road, or how is that important?
So this far north, I don't think there's one.
This is between 201 and I-80.
This is north of Hill. So is it going to continue up from south to...
BRT was from 201 south.
It's phased. The first phase is from 201, actually south of 201 south. Yeah, 201.
Second phase?
It's like a third phase goes north of 201, I think.
But not on this corridor, but separate.
No, 56 west is the border.
So that's on the third phase. First phase is going south of 201.
This isn't to do a grade separation for the railroad.
So that part is already funded, the grade separation with the railroad.
Oh, it is. Okay.
This is to actually widen the road from there. Gotcha.
Thank you very much for your presentation. We appreciate it. And thanks for being here and your expertise.
If I can have one more thing, Mayor.
Sure.
As many of you may or may not know, Dave Schwartz, who's our program manager, took a different position, and Troy Peterson has taken his position in the region, so hopefully he'll be doing these presentations in the future.
Hey, Troy, wouldn't they be just keep kicking you out?
Yes.
I'm just assured you were, Troy.
I don't know.
All right, I'm with the Hokies.
Thank you very much. We're going to go to item six. We have a couple of items here. We're going to give some time to Wayne to talk about the meeting schedule.
Thank you, Mayor. Just briefly, at the very back of your packets is the all of the WFRC committees, the meeting schedule for 2017. Transcom will be meeting third Thursday in February, April, June, and August, and second Thursday in November. And so we think our IT person is, you shouldn't see any more invitations from members of the committee or calendar appointments from members of the committee. And so hopefully there won't be as much confusion next year, but this is the Transcom meeting for November this year. There's no Transcom meeting next week.
Oh,
so if you've seen anything,
yeah.
There's no Transcom meeting.
No cookies?
And you had all your protesters coming, right?
I did, yeah.
Okay, Mary,
first time I ever got the Mid-Valley Highway to even be discussed. I've been here 7 years.
Well, call that a big victory.
You can come next week. We'll give you a cookie, and we can talk about MVC again.
Okay, anything else, Lee? We'll now turn the time to Scott. He's going to talk briefly about the Tiger Grant.
Thank you. This is just a very quick update on the Tiger Grant. When we met in August, we had the happy news that we were awarded $20 million through the Tiger Grant process. Since that time, on September 26th, UTA held a stakeholder meeting with all of the communities that have projects on the Tiger list and have asked them for some specific information to better prioritize and refine the project list. So we've got defined project scopes, revised cost estimates, funding availability, and project readiness. UTA has asked the locals to provide that information back by mid-November, so basically right now or the next week or so. And then prior to the end of the year, they're planning to hold another stakeholder meeting. So if you're a community that has any projects on the Tiger list, I'd encourage you to make sure that you're engaged, your staff is engaged in that meeting. And also, if you have any questions, UTA has set up a specific email address for Tiger. So this is Jennifer McGrath and then Richard Miller, who's the project manager, who's going to be managing those funds through the Federal Transit Administration process. And that email address is flmprogram@rideuta.com. So they're going through the first last mile program is what that is. So flmprogram@rideuta.com. And I'll...
Can we have that emailed out to everybody on the email list?
Yes, that'd be great. Certainly, yeah, and I'll include Jim McGrath and Richard Miller's contact information. And Matt, if there's any other UTA related or if you have any questions, just go over it.
Okay. Anything else, Scott?
That's it.
Any other business that needs to come before the group? Seeing none, I'd just like to say one thing in closing. You know, obviously, I mean, we all know this. This is the last meeting of 2016 for Transport. If you go back in your mind and think through 2016, all the money that has been approved, all the projects, all the work by you as elected officials and agencies and board members and the staffs as well, thank you very much for all that has happened and done. It is very it's very rewarding to see how Wasatch Front Regional works with elected officials and so forth. You know, I've never seen big fights. I've never seen big selfishness. It works together, and I just commend you for that in that regard. In the political arena and temperatures that we live in now, that can't be said of all bodies. But thank you for who you are and the accomplishments that's been made. If there's nothing else, we're looking for a motion to dismiss. Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
No opposed. We will see you in 2017.
Second.
Bill.
Sorry.
Bill, just want to thank you for your stellar leadership this year. You've done a great job.
Oh, you're great. Thank you. Thank you and have a